Claire Méraud from Rennes is going to talk now. And it's a change in the program, so I will just read the title. She will be talking about a balanced supergene and Kleinerly versions. And I think it's about seaweed flies, right? Thank you.
Sorry, I'm the surprise talk. So thanks a lot for offering me the last minute opportunity to share my work with you. So I recently started in Rennes. So what I will be presenting today is mostly the result from my postdoc that I did at Université Laval with Louis Bernacchi, and it involved a deep collaboration with Emma Berdan and Marianne Wellenrosser. Does it switch? Okay. So one key feature, I guess, of the natural system is the heterogeneity of environment, and we know that it will select locally for different phenotypes. But what is important to remember is that the selection is multidimensional with many pressure, and also that it varies at different scales. I put here two examples of variation at very large scale. This is a growth along a latitudinal gradient, and this will be more patchy habitats, selecting for colors. And all of this may involve different genetic architecture, in particular because the level of gene pool won't be the same depending on the geographical scale. So I guess that's why we know that recombination matters, and I guess that's why we are all interested in supergene and all of that, because recombination should be positive for adaptation, making new combination, giving modularity to response to different selection pressure. But at the same time, it breaks allelic association. So in some cases, it can protect combination. So one of the best known modifier of recombination is chromosomal inversion. And we now discover that they are present in many species. They can be super large. And they are often involved in what we have been talking about, like the supergene, which are often considered in the case of really coexisting morphotype or coexisting phenotype. But when you look more broadly at inversion, there are many examples of also clinal variation, in which one arrangement of the inversion is present in one region and another one, like in this mosquito. So I'm not sure in this case it's very often called a supergene, but the pattern is really similar. In this seaweed fly, I think we have an interesting system to compare different dynamics. So first, this is a fly. You probably saw it if you go by the seaside, but it's in the decomposing pile of smelly rag bed. But it's limited to this habitat, so it's quite easy to describe its ecology, its environment. And it's occupying a very large zone up to the north. And it's been studied in the 70s because they found an inversion on chromosome 1, which is associated with very, very strong differences in size and life history, so being a polymorphism. And interestingly, they also described at that time four other inversions that were not more deeply studied. So at the beginning of my project and with Emma, we were thinking, OK, what can we do if we return to this system with more genomic tools to better understand how inversion contributes to adaptation across this heterogeneous range. Okay, so we focused on the selective mechanism underlying this chromosomal 1 inversion, which we can truly consider as a supergene, and whether we could detect other inversions. So this is just a few pictures of fieldwork, and to show you that we develop an easy marker to genotype it and record a good description of the habitat. So first things first, we knew very little about the species, so going in the field, I could genotype the inversion and notice that in Canada, like what used to be described in Scandinavia, it's polymorphic everywhere. So you really get the three karyotypes together, and it's also shared between the two continents, suggesting it's quite old. And we noticed that the frequency would co-vary with a very local variation in the rag bed. How deep is it? What kind of seaweed is inside? There was a very high heterozygote excess in most population, so suggesting an heterozygote advantage and a balancing selection effect. So to get a better understanding of what maintains this polymorphism, I did experimental evolution with the help of Benjamin Larissa, Over five generations, we monitor the frequency on two different substrates, but you can see that all the replicates follow more or less the same trajectory. So in a way, it was very consistent, and it was a very quick response, a quick increase in alpha frequency. But at the same time, that means that my conditions were favoring alpha strongly. So to better understand what happened, I wanted to quantify fitness. And because we could genotype adults and eggs, we could split fitness between growth stage and reproductive stage. What we did observe is that the beta allele confers an advantage for larval growth. This is in yellow, the beta-beta homozygotes, and they have a higher survival rate than the alpha-alpha. Heterozygotes are doing well, sometimes better than the homozygotes. And when we measure development time, it's the same for all females, but for males, beta-beta, the small one, develop faster than the big one. It makes sense. But if you think about what happened in the wild, it's super important because the rag bed is ephemeral. It will be removed by tides, by storms. So maybe in nature, alpha-alpha don't get the chance to become adult. Yet when they do, they have a very good reproductive advantage. This is what we notice when we look in the eggs. We had a bias towards more alpha than expected under random mating. So that means that alpha was making more progeny. It makes sense because large males are expected to have a higher reproductive success. And this may not only be size, because we have clues that there may be some female choice and there may be differences in cuticular hydrocarbons between the karyotype. So confirming that this inversion is really affecting many traits, like size, pheromones, well, cuticular hydrocarbons, life history, etc. And in female, alpha was also giving a higher female fecundity. So to summarize, we have a kind of a trade-off between growing and reproducing, and this is mediated by the inversion, the supergene on chromosome 1. And it was opposed, so this is what is called antagonistic pleiotropy. And the question was, is it enough to maintain polymorphism? So to answer that, with Violaine, we did some models, some individual-based model, and asked, how does it maintain polymorphism? If we do a very basic model, the range of parameters under which the trade-off will maintain polymorphism is really restricted. And this was known. You really need a perfect opposition between survival and reproduction to get that. Yet, recent theory suggests that sex-specific effect, dominance, and environmental heterogeneity may matter. And indeed, we have that in this system. So we have differences of phenotype linked to the arrangement between sex. We do have some overdominance. We have a reversal of dominance and heterogeneity. Remember, the rag bed are not the same from one place to the other, and they won't last as long. So if we put everything in the model to make something more realistic, we get a much higher likelihood to maintain polymorphism. And it's likely that all of this is kind of combining, contributing to this diversity. In short, this antagonistic pleiotropy results in overdominance and some sexually antagonistic selection. So overall, this gives a very strong balancing selection. So this is just a short summary of this supergene linked to several traits, and particularly a survival-reproduction trade-off leading to balancing selection, and that is mediated like spatially and temporally by a variation in the habitat, so micro variation in a patchy habitat, really a mosaic of habitats. And I guess this pleiotropy is quite frequent in cases of supergene because of all the gene being inside, right? So I think this is possibly a more general pattern, this antagonistic pleiotropy across inversion systems. Now I promise you that we return with more genomic tools to this system. So what we did is I've been collecting all along the coast in Canada, along a gradient of 1,000 kilometers, in which I recorded environmental variation and collected about 100 flies per population. We sequenced them at low coverage and assembled a genome to study that. So what we observed when we look at how is genetic variation spread, using a principal component analysis on the SNP, was that really we observed again the three groups that correspond to the three karyotypes of the supergene. So this supergene underlies a major part of within species diversity, and it even emerged when you do a basic structure plot. This is the supergene that's driving that, while it's only 10% of the gene. We could locate it in the genome, so on chromosome 1, it's about 25 megabase, so about 10% of the genome. It's very divergent between alpha and beta, as we can expect, and it has very high heterozygosity in the centrum. We can also confirm that there is very high linkage disequilibrium in this area, so all features that we would expect for a supergene inversion. Now we were thinking, oh, maybe we can go deeper into what are the genes involved. So basically doing a GWAS to associate size with SNP just give us that all candidates are inside the supergene. Some will be active genes, others will just be linked. So Emma did a good RNA-seq analysis to try to go deeper and disentangle which gene would differ in expression, which gene won't. So out of thousands of genes, only a subset of them, hundreds of them, were differentially expressed between karyotypes, most of them in cis, so inside the supergene. One interesting thing we got when combining the transcriptomic approach and the genomic approach, we found good candidates that are involved in the same pathway that is involved in increased feeding behavior. So this would be an interesting candidate to pursue if we want to disentangle this genetic basis. Now, we knew we were expecting more inversion, so I wanted to return to that with kind of naive eyes inside the genome, and we use an indirect method of detection to look for haploblocks. So the basic idea is, you remember the PCA with the three groups? So here we are doing PCA on windows along the genome and try to see if we find this pattern of three groups and a pattern that is coherent over a group of local PCA. We use this package and ask, like, do we observe a pattern of clustering of analysis? A small note, I realized this is very useful to locate sex chromosome in systems in which we don't know it. That's what we did with Anne-Laure Ferchaud and found two chromosomes of putative Y autosome fusion in the Greenland halibut using this method. So now coming back to the fly, we detect back our supergene, so good, the method worked. And then on chromosome 4, I detected a very credible pattern suggesting 1.8 megabase long inversion and 2 link inversion on the other part of the chromosome. So it corresponds to what was described by cytogenetics, one chromosome with one inversion on one arm and 2 on the other. There were also some weird regions, possibly low recombination, possibly big pericentromeric regions, as we've just discussed. Maybe misassembly of the genome that I need to correct now. So these are under investigation. I hope to address that using IC data. I just want to show you that. So with the recent IC data we got, we improved the quality of the assembly and did an assembly for the alpha-alpha and for the beta-beta, for the supergene. So then we wanted to compare LG1 and LG1, so the first chromosome of the alpha and beta, and you can see that it's not a simple inversion. It's not just a reverse. And it was expected somehow, so I think inside that we will find this kind of pattern with different strata and sub-rearrangement that you do observe in other supergene or sex chromosomes. Some pieces are really very divergent, some others are more similar, so this is what I need to tackle now, to go inside and see what's going on and what's the history of this. And using IC, I'm hoping to resolve the other parts of low recombination. So now I ask, how do those inversions relate to environmental heterogeneity and possibly to local adaptation? First, because we explore a large gradient, I was expecting some structure. It was quite weak, suggesting there is a lot of connectivity in the system. Yet, they vary along the north-south gradient. This is pairwise FST between population. So the further they are, the more differentiated they are, which is a classic pattern of isolation by distance. And what's maybe more interesting is that when we split the genome between inversion and collinear genome, it's not exactly the same. So we snip in black from the collinear genome. There is a weak but significant pattern of isolation by distance. If I look at the supergene in purple, no signal at all. And the inversion on chromosome 4, there is a very strong pattern of isolation by distance. And this is mirrored by the Kleinhoff frequency. So this is the inversion frequency as a function of latitude. So for the supergene in purple, there is no Klein, and the one, and the one, and the inversion is rare in the north. Then I ask if I find association between a SNP and environment. And when we look for climate, so large-scale variation, we had high association with the inversion on chromosome 4. This is a bit supported by an analysis of QTL for chill coma. The flies, when they get cold, they fall into coma and then they can wake up again. So this is the trait I scored. And using a family cross, we find putative QTL on the same chromosome. So I think this inversion on chromosome 4 are a good candidate for adaptation to cold stress, and this is something I will be testing very soon. Now, if I look at fine scale variation, so what I mentioned before, the patchiness of rag bed characteristics, all SNP were more or less in the inversion, so confirming what we already know from the inversion pattern. So to summarize, we have investigating different sources of environmental variation and different scales, and how the chromosomal inversion could be involved into that. Somehow we can consider that each inversion may favor adaptation in this system, which is highly connected, and the different inversions could be somehow modular because they adapt to different scales of environmental variation. So, in a way, there is kind of what I call the balanced supergene, which affects size, life history at fine scale, with fine scale variation, and three collinear inversion on which we know much less about the phenotype, but which show quite a different pattern in this system with which occupies a very large geographic gradient. And I want to just not to compare these two patterns of balanced polymorphism and clinal polymorphism, because I think this is somehow important in terms of what we understand about supergene or inversion evolution. In terms of how they could contribute to the evolution of diversity. So for instance, in this clinal inversion, it seems to be associated to a structural environment, while this one with which is balanced is mostly linked to an environmental mosaic of variation. So from what we know, we think that this pattern is due to different selection regime, but then how does it affect other features? So when I look at the heterozygote frequency, I mentioned for the supergene that there was an excess of heterozygotes. For the clinal inversion, they were at Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. So in terms of heterozygote fitness, we know that this one shows overdominance. For the inversion of chromosome 4, I haven't tested yet, but maybe we could expect no overdominance, and or perhaps underdominance, we don't know yet. Something that's important is that in this case, that means that the arrangement will be more frequently at heterozygote stage. And so there won't be as much recombination as there is in this case, because here in the north, it will be at homozygote stage a lot, and the same in the south, it will be the other arrangement will be at homozygote stage. So we expect more recombination somehow going on than in a system which is balanced with plenty of heterozygotes everywhere. And with Emma, we were discussing that a lot and thinking that this should affect how much accumulation or purge of deleterious mutation, depending on the real genotype distribution, you know. As a quick look into that, I look at the proportion of transposable elements on repeat along the chromosome. So this is for chromosome 4, and this is for chromosome 1. So you see in the old balanced supergene, there is a more transposable element. While this is not the case, this is the first inversion, this is the red one, and those are the pink one. So this one feels like there is less accumulation of transposable element. And in terms of genetic architecture, we suspect this one to have many strata. This one seems to be more simple, but I need to look more deeply into that. And finally, what I always wonder is that in the long run, like, how does it translate at macroevolutionary level? This one, we suspect that it's also present in a sister species, so it could be a trans-specific polymorphism. While the clinal one may be more likely to be fixed or to be differentiated either between lineages or between species. And when we try to date them, it also appears a bit younger. So now I want to compare whether it's present in similar species to try to understand the past and the possibly try to think about the future with models about what the two regime can do on inversion and supergenes. So I'm very grateful for everyone that's been involved, and thank you for your attention.